Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Theater Podcast, intimate personal conversations with the industry's biggest names. This is actually the first episode of a Kite Runner takeover. The Kite Runner on Broadway, the cast and creatives are taking over the podcast. So this is the first of a series of several episodes that are going to be all focused on the Kite Runner and the people involved with it. Just an amazing, amazing show if you haven't seen it yet. So the guest for this episode is Salar Nader. He's a super talented guy, super nice. He's bringing awareness of the tabla to the world, and those are hand drums. He's going to get into exactly what all this is, and I'm sure you've heard it. He's mixing R&B and hip-hop into this traditional Afghan instrument. It's just this super, super cool idea, and he actually helped compose and create the original stage adaptation of The Kite Runner many years ago. Of course, he tells that story, so... Find me online, Instagram and Twitter at @theater_podcast, on TikTok at @thetheaterpodcast. Find me on the web, leave a rating, leave a review, you know, the drill, everything that we always say. So now everybody please enjoy this episode with Salar Nader.
Here you go, 1, 2, 3.
I am so truly excited to introduce today's guest, which I think I can easily classify as percussionist royalty. Hailed as Afghanistan's tabla virtuoso, he is a percussionist, composer, educator, and producer. Mentored by Grammy Award winner Zakir Hussain, he currently tours with legendary bassist Stanley Clark. Having a family history incredibly similar to the backstory of the hit Broadway play The Kite Runner, he originally composed the music and has now played tabla in a total of 7 Kite Runner productions, including this Broadway run throughout the U.S. and Canada. Salar Nader, welcome to the Theater Podcast.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you much for having me. Man, that was pretty amazing. What was that? 300 words and under a minute. Do you remember the Micro Machine Man? I mean, I'm aging myself right now, but that was the 80s.
That guy was the best. I could do that if I had a script that I was reading, and that I can't, because that dude, he had Guinness Book World Records for like the fastest talking person.
Did he?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that was up there.
Yeah. I'm I think you and I
catch up.
Yeah. You and I, like, I think pretty much the same age. I remember all of that, and, you know, coming home from school and watching Smurfs and Gummy Bears and Tailspin and DuckTales and all of that.
He-Man and Thundercat. And
heck yeah.
Voltron. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's just not talk about anything except 80s cartoons right now. I think
there you go.
I want to real quick just get a semantic thing. So tabla, is it? So the pronunciation. I want to make sure I'm saying everything right. So tabla, is it tabla or tabla?
It's the tabla.
Tabla.
So tabla is how we would say it. So so maybe like almost like how you would say the. So tabla.
Tabla. So they're hand drums. And is the plural also tabla or tablas?
Tablas. Now, here's the thing. It's the tabla is about a 400 to 500 year old instrument.
Yeah.
And it refers to the smaller drum, which is the higher pitched instrument. And so that's a tabla. Now, the bayan or the bass drum, I play tabla southpaw, so I'm a lefty when I play tabla, but when I play baseball, I throw with my right hand and I swing right handed. So I'm a switch hitter when it comes to tabla. And so tablas would be referring to many of the smaller drums, and then daga or bayan, which means your left hand in Hindi, or in Farsi, Dari, you would say bam, B-A-M, like Bam Bam from the Flintstones. More 80s cartoons. I'm going to go there. It's all good. So the bam is the bass where you get all those dipping tones and doom and, you know, the sounds I demonstrated on stage with you a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that. So I don't know. We haven't gotten the footage back from BroadwayCon yet. We're still waiting to be sent. That's why I haven't released it. But along with this Kite Runner takeover that's happening now, which includes Salar and others from the show, We'll release. I'll release the live panel. We had a live panel with him and many other people. So yeah, like that was an incredible panel. And one of my most favorite moments was when you were doing the tabla demonstration. And you know, it's like not often do you get to sit on stage, not as a Broadway person, with Broadway performers and witness this talent within like 3 to 4 feet of their greatness. And oh, man, just to be there. And did you see the video? I took a video
I did.
From the reverse.
It's one of my favorite selfie videos that I've reposted a bunch of times on different platforms.
Oh, thank you.
I love it.
It's so good. And one of the greatest things I think about that moment, though, and something I had never thought about until that moment, was when you got ready to perform, you took your shoes off. And
yeah, and then I stunk up the room. You know, like, tough acting, tin acting.
Another 80s reference.
What's that smell? Yeah, there you go.
Tough acting, tin acting. Whoops.
John Madden.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the shoes must come off. The shoes must go. And you know, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but part of the tradition is that it's a spiritual tradition. And anytime I'm allowed to connect with the instrument or the drum, or if a sitarist or sarod player or rabab player, we have our you know, our routine. And part of that is, you always wash your hands. You make kind of an internal prayer before you connect with the instrument, because it's the instrument that's helped you get to the stage. At the end of the day, that's what we believe. So it's a you know, give and take and an exchange. And there's a belief that, you know, when and if the instrument accepts you, that's when, you know, doors will open. So, you know, the least I can do is take off my old shoes when I approach the instrument. And especially when I've been walking 30 blocks, 40 blocks in Manhattan.
Yeah. Set foot in one subway, and it's worse than every other public restroom in every other city. The reason I brought that up was that it's almost personifying the instruments and treating them like a living entity. And I wanted to get into like your philosophical sort of belief behind the interconnectivity of all of us, of you and me, of the world, of when you're creating these vibrations. The whole world operates in vibrations, and it's the ebb and flow of the tide, and literal music is vibrating of strings or shaking of whatever materials on top of drums, whatever the case is. And so every heartbeats, everything is a rhythm and a vibration. And so when you're approaching the instrument as a master, as a guru, like, it seems like it's more than just picking up and playing. It's plugging in and connecting. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a couple things that you just reminded me of. In the movie Avatar, if you remember, when the I forget which character it was, but when they connect with those like dragon flying horses, mm-hmm. initially they plug in and
make the bond.
That, well, yeah. That's what it is with our instrument. And to quote my guru, my ustad, because I still, no matter how long I've been doing this, I am still a student, and I'm still learning every time I set foot on the stage, and learning from everybody else in the cast with the way they move. You know, they inspire what I play each night. And so Zakir Hussain is who I've studied with all my life and continue to study with. And he believes and says that the instrument has a spirit itself, and that we honor that and we pay homage to that spirit anytime we connect with it. And and also even the instrument maker, sometimes you'll have the opportunity. It's not like, you know, when you want to go to Guitar Center and you want to buy a new guitar, you just go out and you pick it up and it's, hey, you want this one, man? You want the Fender? You want the Rhodes or whatever? You know, whatever it is. But if you're in Afghanistan or India or Pakistan, you'll go actually sit with the maker. You'll have tea. You'll break bread. You'll really connect with him. he'll pass you the instrument, you'll play the instrument, get it to your liking, and there's a connection there also. So from the root source, you know, whatever animal it was, and then and the vibrations that are created once that skin is stretched by the maker, then lands in my lap, and hopefully it speaks to, you know, thousands of people who are coming in and out of the hell and haze each night.
That's really interesting. Something you said, it's skin. You're stretching skin across this wooden shell, right? And so it's the wood was alive. The skin of the animal was alive, which is nothing against guitar players. The guitar, a lot, some of that is wood, but a lot of it is mechanical. It's electronic. It doesn't, I guess, it wasn't truly alive at any point in the same way that tabla, I got to get this right, tabla, was alive. And I didn't know the process of like sitting, breaking bread, and becoming basically a friend of whoever is giving you this gift to allow you to then create this music to give gift to others. It seems very circular and very spiritual.
Absolutely. When in 2004, I went to India for my first trip, and it was just Guru Purnima, which is the day you celebrate your teacher, a week ago. So it was celebrated globally where you honor your teacher. And so I landed in July of 2004, and upon checking in to the hotel, I got in to check in. I said, you need to call this tabla maker and let him know that, you know, Solar is here and I'm a student of Ustad Zakir Sain, and I need to have my tabla ready for the Guru Purnima festival. And, you know, I didn't even get a call back. I got back up to my room. I called my teacher, Zakirji, and he said, oh, there's, you know, word on the street is that this guy from California has landed in Mumbai and he's just calling the shots. Like, he needs his drum to be sent to his hotel. And you know, I felt a little embarrassed there, because I noticed that, wait a minute, this isn't about, like, the drum costs $999 or $1,000, and here's the money, so now you give me a perfect drum. These aren't machine manufactured. They're mm-hmm. made with literally blood, sweat, and tears. And so I realized that the instrument qualities also, there's a destiny and a connection in kismet with when you will arrive at a point where the instrument that is given to you, even though you've purchased it for the same price as another person, might sound better. It might have a different way of speaking and connecting with you, and therefore connecting better with the audience and having those perfect frequencies and harmonies coming off that skin. So I've been very lucky. A quick little story I'll give you. February of 2020, a month before the pandemic, right? I went out and bought 3 sets of tablas because I thought I was going to do 100 concerts with Stanley Clark. So I bought the perfect E drum, the perfect D drum, the perfect F sharp drum. Get home, it's like Feb 28th, turn on the TV and it's like, the government announces that we're going to do a 2-week shutdown. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. All right, well, 2 weeks, I get to take 2 weeks off and then I'll hit the road. We were going to start the tour in, I think, Dublin, Ireland. So anyways, those drums, knock on wood, have lasted me till this point. They waited until the Kite Runner opened, and I've been playing on those instruments. So they've lasted me 3 years, touch wood. And they sound amazing. I'm so surprised the way they're singing in this hall. So there's another plug as to why people need to show up.
they wear out, and then you have to yes. just get new ones. Can you replace the skin, or is it just done?
Sometimes if the skins want to go, they just go. And there's like a little rip that'll start, and then it'll sound, if you don't see it coming, it'll sound like a piece of paper is being torn in half. And then you'll look down and you're like, whoa, the drum's like smiling at you. It's amazing because, you know, when I tour with different rock drummers or jazz drummers, the company will come out and they'll bring like 3-4 drum heads in case our drummer goes through his kick drum, or they'll replace it during the concert. But for us, playing this, you know, 500-year-old tradition instrument, there's no mechanism yet to where we could change it on the spot. So I usually have to have a secret backup off stage, or I'll call up a few other tabla players in the vicinity and be like, hey, you know, be on call if you can, help me out, help a brother out if we run into that situation. So far, so good. We got a great insurance policy here.
We're going to take a short break. Stay tuned for more of the episode.
So The Kite Runner, it opened recently on Broadway, did so well in the UK, came over here. It's phenomenal over here. And I want you to talk to the origin story of creating a visual production out of this, because it's obviously a well-known book. It's won so many awards and it's incredible in the message it brings and the awareness it brings. But you were one of, you were part of the driving force that actually brought this into fruition.
Yeah. So basically in, let's go back to 1994. So 1994, right? There we go.
Wayne's World.
I walk into this, party and I'm like, oh, there's a set of tabla. And there's this, tabla master from Kabul visiting, during that time. His name is Asif John. And he was playing accompanying, a very famous female vocalist. And what I didn't know was it was the night of Khalid Hosseini's, the author of The Kite Runner.
Mm-hmm.
Oops, drop that name. Let me pick that up real quick. So he was getting engaged. It was his engagement party. So what would happen with me back then is I would walk in, I was a young little whippersnapper, itching to play the drums, you know, inching towards the drum set. So finally, I got my chance. I played two or three songs. Fast forward to 2004, I attend a Khalid Hosseini Kite Runner book signing, you know, NY Times bestseller. When I approach Khalid, he's like, Salar. I'm like, wait, what? He's like, man, what are you doing here? I was like, I want to get my book signed. He's like, man, get over here. He's like, we're family. He's like, did you not forget? I have a VHS tape of you performing at the engagement party. And I was like, get out. That was your engagement party. And I have a blown up picture of it in my studio. And he said, hey, look, man, do you want to get involved with any music, anything you'd like to contribute? And I was like, absolutely. That's why I'm here. I came out to say, if this is going to turn into a, you know, stage adaptation, I'd love to be involved. So fast forward another year, I get a call from Matthew Spangler from SJSU. He says, hey, I'm adapting this into a play. Let's get together. Khalid recommended you. So we sat together in his living room, page by page, and talked about different sections and cue points where we could hear different tabla music at the time within the SJSU workshop. So the workshop was happening at San Jose State University. So we workshopped it there. A couple years later, San Jose Repertory Theater, David Iyer Goldstein made the world premiere, and they had me come along as composer. So that's where I featured different elements of Afghan music, instrumentation like the rabab, dil rabab, Afghan zir baghali. And so now for this production, though, there's been so many different elements like the atan scene, the dance scene, the circular dancing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something that goes back, I would say, at least 1500 years in Afghan, like, warrior tradition. It's a mountain dance. It's a dance that the different like warriors would do to prepare for battle, believe it or not. So the drummer would, you know, kind of like when you see a film, modern day film about, you know, the Civil War, there's someone on the snare and, you know, they're marching through it, same concept. And so it eventually became a celebratory piece of music for weddings. So March of this year, Jonathan Gerling and Giles Croft came over to Los Angeles, and I was showcasing a two-night festival of traditional Afghan music. And they came out and saw a full 20-minute atan. Usually some atan dances can be 40 minutes. It's like starts really slow, and it's like the dance till you drop, is what I call it. Last man standing. So usually I'll stand in the middle and I'm the poor guy that got, have to keep on going. But here we do it for about, I don't know, 35 seconds, maybe 45 seconds every night, and the audience loves it. I don't want to root it for the audience, but you got to come out and hear this Atan dance. So for me personally, for the Atan to be on Broadway, I would have never imagined in a million years for that to happen. So I'm so grateful and happy that everybody was so open to this idea and this concept and for it happening, because that's something that really showcases the authentic culture of Afghanistan. Because a lot of people don't know that Afghanistan has its own dance traditions, its own poetry, poetic traditions, song, you know, so many different genres of music, you know, when you traverse the mm-hmm. different regions. But anyways, I can go on and on. I know we only have so much time here.
That's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating to me how you're underscoring the entire production. And it's not a musical, it's a play. But so there's no like songs, there's nobody singing, but there is music the entire time. And it's coming from you, and it's coming from others in the cast who are using hand instruments as well at various points to accentuate the action. And it's just so brilliantly done. It feels like I am watching a movie live. And for you sitting at the foot of the stage at any particular time, has it become harder for you? I remember you saying in the live event previously that there were some times when you have to disconnect because the emotion is so hard. Like, now that you've opened, things have been going on for a while, this is the seventh production, but gosh, are you still, is it still emotionally as deep for you as it was at the very beginning?
Absolutely. So I have, there's a line, you know, saying that there's been 20 years of war because it's 2001, but now we're in 2022 and mm-hmm. it's still, you know, a mess there, a massive mess. And 95% of the Afghan population is facing famine and starvation because they're not allowing assistance in and food in to the country. So it's a really, really, we're finding ourselves at a very dangerous crossroad with the innocent people of Afghanistan, the kids. Mm-hmm. And so this hits home every day. I have almost 110 first cousins that are still there. I have very close family that's trying to work on reopening schools, helping women enter different positions within the society, which within the workplace. And so I deal with this every day. Every morning I get an update. Every evening I get at least one message from an aspiring tabla player who's like, please help me. And I should mention that in 2020, I launched SNTF, the Solarnator Tabla Foundation. And that's a foundation where we give out scholarships, music scholarships, to students from all walks of life, all over the world. And that's one way I've tried to help some of these kids who are still dreaming, you know, they want to become something. And it can be tabla, it can be flute, it can be piano, something creative. And so me being here right now is trying to open that door up, so hopefully their dreams stay alive. And so, yeah, I'm like literally bawling some nights on stage, and I'm like, okay, please don't turn my lights on, because how can I not? There's so many parallels with my life. My mom attended our opening last week, and it was her first time in New York in 35 years. Our wow. first stop from as Afghan refugees was Queens, New York. So we lived here from 1982 through 85. And then I started kindergarten in San Francisco. And so I remember Pizza by the Slice, playing in the playground. And the other night we passed by Casino Boulevard. And then my mom was like, well, we used to live off of that street in Queens. So, and she asked me, do you want to go? And I said, I don't know if I'm ready for that yet. I don't know if I'm ready to go stand in front of the buildings and just feel that yet. Maybe before the run's over. But, Yeah, it hits home. It hits hard because we live it. We're living it, and we're still living what's happening within the country and the refugees that we connect with on a daily basis.
Well, right. So you mentioned it, and I wanted to just expand on that for people listening now, that your family, you were born in 81 in Germany to Afghan parents, and then but your parents were also, they were forced to flee in the actual Russian-Afghan war that is being dramatized in The Kite Runner. So you literally lived through the experience that we're watching unfold in such a horrifically dramatic way on stage. And so, yeah, it makes total sense that you're just not ready yet. That's hard.
Every time we get into that mode to prepare for that scene, when I'm looking at that like caravan of 8 to 10 actors who are on stage, I see my aunts, I see my baby cousins, because I know those stories of how they actually, some of them were smuggled through the Pakistan border, but then part of the trip was to walk through the mountains. And these aren't like, you know, we're talking, when I visit Denver, Colorado, and we're above 6,000, 7,000 feet, that's how high it was. And to wear sandals and try to walk through that in the dark of night so that the Russian helicopters didn't detect you. You know, that when I'm in that scene, I have to try to turn that off. But some nights I let myself go, you know, and I play through that scene also. You know, there's underscore that happens there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's heavy. It's heavy, but I'm really grateful that Khaled wrote these factual historical pieces of the Afghan story into The Kite Runner so that we don't forget. You know, it's easy to really forget that because it was, you know, the late 70s, the early 80s, but now we see it happening right now in another part of the world. Mm-hmm. And so I hope that people can still open up their hearts to the innocent people of Afghanistan who, you know, they're really paying the price. You know, there's some guilt I live with because I made it out and Survivor's I get to guilt. Be out here. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to ask about that. If like you're literally on Broadway 8 times a week, in front of entertaining people, right? You're entertaining and you've been all over the TV and all over the world and all over this. And then, yeah, there's people who can't get clean water.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad you brought up the foundation because so much of what you do and who you are is about interconnectivity. And that's why I brought that up earlier, interconnectivity with the instrument and the culture and everything. But you give back. Everything you do seems to be about giving back and acknowledging and trying to help others get lifted up as well. And
absolutely,
as much as possible, turning a really horrible situation into something a little bit better.
You know, my parents integrated me into, you know, when I first started playing the instrument, they were like, okay, what's going on with this guy? Like, what is this knack he has for the drums? And I met my teacher in 88. And he accepted me as his student. So he trained me. And then my parents said, well, we don't see you doing this as a profession because I was still a child. So I would show up to different concerts in the 80s that were fundraising concerts for different Afghan orphanages and organizations that were helping families get out or families assimilate or arrive to California or New York. And in every concert I played from the age of 7 all the way up until I want to say 18, I donated everything I earned. I never, there were nights where I remember people would shower the front of the stage with, it was like they would make it rain and they were like, I think 20s and $100 bills. But I was trained to, pick up my tablas and walk off stage and then say that please donate these funds And I remember other kids would be like, oh my God, that was so much money. Why don't you grab some, like at least a couple notes? And I was like, no, my mom and dad told me that, you know, I need to donate this and it needs to help.
I just love that you got to gloss over. You're just like, I've been playing concerts since I was seven. Like, literally, I have a 7.5-year-old, a 6-year-old, and God, like, they're just good at video games and, like, making a mess.
Well, I did that too. RBI Baseball, Tecmo Bowl, and then I had my Sega Genesis and
that's right,
and all that. And I'm trying to get back into it because these gamers now make a pretty good.
Yeah.
So if they continue, you never know.
I know. I'm trying to encourage the love of electronics and coding. I like the creation of video games. And then
right.
I wanted to touch on that with you too, real quick. I know we're out of time, but you've done music for video games too, because there's a lot of underscoring, right?
Right. Video games, of course, films. There was a video game conference. Oh my gosh, what was it? Sony PlayStation.
Yeah, the E3.
And I opened
E3,
up
right?
The E3, exactly.
Yeah.
And we opened up that conference, and yeah, I mean the tabla is actually still being discovered. And it was just in an iPhone commercial this year, a couple months ago. And everybody's like, was that you? And Kendrick Lamar just used it in a song. And a lot of people were texting me, did you play tabla there? And I'm like, okay, good. Now it's arrived on Broadway. So we're just beginning to scratch the surface on the instrument's capabilities, because it's an instrument that can be tuned. But then on the other hand, you can play notes. You can play a 7-note scale and up to 2, maybe 3 octaves, depending on how good the instrument is and the player is. And so it's sky's the limit. Sky is the limit. I mean, I've been taught that it's limitless. And so I'm going to throw this out there, actually. A friend of mine was saying we should get Hugh Jackman out here, you know, to do a tap and tabla thing. Music Man versus Kite Runner on Good Morning America. So, hey, I'm ready to go.
All right. I'm gonna clip this out. We're going to send it to his team. We're going to make
there
it happen.
Go.
And I want you
got to be there.
I of course, I will be there. You let me know. The Cellar System is like your new kind of, what is it, a genre, yeah, a collection? And I actually want to play, before you explain what it is, I want to play it.
Okay. Hey.
This is from the Afghan Talent season finale, season 10 finale.
Nice.
And then we get into the fun part. So you're blending R&B, hip hop, and like all this modern electronic EDM with this 500-year-old technique. And I think it is brilliant. And you're getting noticed for it for obvious reasons.
Thank you. And, you know, that trip, that was actually in Kabul, 2016, on Afghan Star, which you mentioned, for Nowruz. And I showed up and everybody was like, well, he's probably going to play a classical tabla solo. And I said, nuh-uh. I said, I want the audience to just hear something that they weren't prepared for. And they actually ended up, one of the eldest judges on that show, his name is Mir Maftun, and the guy plays this instrument called the danbura, or dotar, literally means two strings. He was about to jump out of his seat my mother-in-law tells me every time she watches that video, she's like, he's about to just get off of his seat and start dancing. And he's from like the Badakhshan region of Afghanistan, like the mountain regions, and he can't stop clapping. And I said, uh-huh, you know, light bulb went off. Music, rhythm, melody, has no boundary, has no border. And as cliche as it sounds, it doesn't. And mm-hmm. you can communicate anything with anyone. It's almost like it's the most peaceful way of connection and communication there is. And I saw it there. I'm so happy you shared that little bit. And I was in a punk rock band in the early 90s.
That's right.
Drum set. So I'll send you the next creation. It's going to be heavy, heavy metal with tabla.
Really? Oh, my goodness. I would love to hear that. Okay. So three questions I ask everybody to wrap up the episodes. The first one, just very simply, is what motivates you?
Everyday breath and oxygen, which I need right now. Motivation is something that I would say inspiration is, for me, having the luxury of being able to wake up daily without a bomb dropping within 50 feet and having that limitless opportunity is, if that's not self-motivating or inspiring, I don't know what is. I've been really lucky and blessed. So freedom is the source.
Wow. So next question then is, what advice would you give to your younger self and younger people listening now, starting out down a similar path?
Go with your gut. Listen to your heart. Of course, never stop dreaming, but realize the dream. And always, always stay close to your mentors and teachers.
No one has ever said that before. And it is so simplistically beautiful. Like your mentor, your true mentors, your true teachers, they're always going to have your back. I get it. I get it. All right.
Because they walk the path.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They've given you the blueprint.
Yeah. So the last question, and I asked this in the live event, so don't worry about giving the same answer. Just say the first thing that's on your mind in this moment. So if you could only see one show for the rest of your life, but you can see it as many times as you want, what would you see?
Wow. One show. Can it be a film, or does it have
anything
to be
anything? First thing that came to mind.
Wow. Two things that came to mind: The Goonies and Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory. I don't know. Those were the first two that came to mind.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Okay. Where can we find you online, connect with you, get information on the foundation and the scholarships?
Thank you so much. So at Solar System and Solar Nader on Instagram, as well as Twitter. SolarNader.com is the website where you can read up on SNTF, the foundation. And yeah, just all SolarNader and Solar System. The music as well, Spotify, iTunes, it's everywhere. And enjoy it. If people are taking time out of their lives to look me up or have a listen, I thank you with eternal gratitude. And I hope you make it to the Helen Hayes so I can perform for you.
Yes, everybody, please go see The Kite Runner. It is so good, and Salar is so good as well. Thank you so
Alan.
Much. I really, really
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
My pleasure, brother. Thank you so much.
Take a deep breath, make the world a little colorful.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.